Colorado, part one. I was going stir crazy. I'd been back from Europe for 5.5 months, and I was in desperate need for a change of scenery. Lacking the time off and finances to schedule a trip abroad, I focused on locations closer to home, locations within driving distance. The downside was, it was a quick fix. The upside was, the proximity meant I got to spend quality time with several of my best friends. In early May, we started looking at our options. Before long, we selected the San Juan Mountain Range, which surrounds Durango, and is a few miles northeast of Cortez in Colorado. Google Maps told us that each leg of the trip would cover some 450 miles. By the end of the planning stage, there were four of us able to make the trip. Nick, Dan, and I would meet up in Prescott before driving up from Arizona, while Lander would fly in from Montana and plan to meet us at the Durango Airport. Eager to maximize our time, I headed north immediately after getting off work. By 7, we were on the road to Flagstaff, and by 10 in the evening, we were somewhere in the middle of the desert in northern Arizona. The drive was fun, if a little cramped, as the three of us, all over 6 foot, piled in the Nick's Ford Cavalier with our various sleeping bags, tents, and packs. By 1:30 in the morning, we had crossed in the Colorado, passed through Cortez, and could practically taste Durango mountain air. Our minds were already filled with the spring-laden mountain meadows full of blossoming wildflowers and fresh, recently ripened wild strawberries. By 1:45, we were staring out the car windows with wide eyes and in shock. The weather had been rainy all day and night, but now we were seeing what looked like the white of snow along the sides of the roads. It was just far enough out that we couldn't tell for sure if it was snow or just late-night frost, until I also noticed that the street signs were covered in a splattering of white crystalline sludge. Surprised and a bit disgruntled, we rolled forward for another 20 minutes, dropping in altitude until we found ourselves in a cold, damp, but blessedly snow-free Durango. Lander had found a bus in from the airport and luckily had a warm hotel room ready and waiting. We caught up quickly before setting our alarms and crawling in the bed. Please see the original blog post for a map that outlines the various regions and stops along the trip. Stop 1. Thursday wasn't exactly a camper's dream. It was overcast, almost to the point of being foggy. There was a light drizzle, falling intermittently, and everything was wet and cold. Undaunted, we tossed our bags back into the car before figuring out a way to squeeze in Lander in his added bag, then headed down the street to the local Albertsons to pick up provisions. A few cans of Spam, beans, canned pears, chili, and a few bottles of water and liquor later, we made our second stop at the local outdoor store. There, I picked up a few flies for fishing, a 3-day fishing license, and the boys grabbed a frisbee. As I stared out at the medicine cabinet full of flies, trying to pick one, I made the mistake of asking the elderly gentleman working the counter if he had any recommendations. After staring at me aghast, he overcame his shock and offered up several obvious and worthless recommendations, in between assurances that fly fishing was pointless under current conditions, a fact I was well aware of. I could tell he'd already decided I was an idiot of a tourist and written me off. I realized I wasn't going to get anything useful out of him, but just in case, I decided to ask if any of the trails we were debating hiking were open yet. By his response, you'd have thought I'd have grown antlers and a tail. He eventually offered up several local trail options before seeing us off. Point 2. We piled back into the car and decided to head towards Shark's Tooth and the transfer campground, curious how far we would make it and wondering how much snow was on the ground. We made the 30 or so minute drive up into the foothills. Before long, we had passed out of the gently misted rolling green hills and were surrounded by snow-dusted scrub oak and juniper trees. As we pushed on, we passed in the areas covered with snow but still showing signs of spring. Flowers were blooming, grass was growing, and everything was fresh. Eventually, we reached Transfer Campground, and after pausing for a quick photo and a view from the lookout, which overlooks a beautiful pine in Aspen Valley, we decided that we would press on, braving the snow, push on towards Shark's Tooth, and find campgrounds later down in the road. Despite the snow, everything was green and the flowers were vibrant yellows, pushing up through the wet, damp snow as it quickly turned in the slush. The road signs warned that Shark's Tooth was some 15 miles ahead. We pushed on down the well-maintained dirt road onto rough gravel and managed to make it 9 miles before coming to a forced stop. We'd long ago left any other tire marks in the snow behind and were starting to face decent-sized, gravel-laden, snow-covered hills, which demanded we abandon our forward trek. Only marginally defeated, we pulled over the side at a small trailhead, grabbed our day packs, and set off across the white landscape. We were surrounded by gorgeous aspens and small pools fed by snowmelt, all covered by 3 or 4 inches of snow. The sun's glare off of the snow was nearly blinding. As we wound down along the path and eventually looped around, we decided to abandon the set path and cut across country back towards the car. Up and over a large hill covered in small snowmelt, streams and dotted by fresh buds of mountain cabbages pushing their way up through the icy dusting. We headed somewhat confidently in the suspected direction of our car. Eventually, after a fair amount of debate, a bit of luck, and some perseverance, we found our way back to the meadow where we had parked. Exhausted, cold, and wet, we paused for a quick snack before hopping back into the car and making our way back towards Dolores. Part 3. After passing through town, we continued to wind up along the Dolores River to where the West Fork splits off. There, we drove another mile or so through a gentle drizzle before finding a campground that had a fantastic site located next to the river at a bend with plenty of room for our tents and privacy. The West Fork of the Dolores ran directly past our campsite, offering smooth, soothing sounds and wonderful scents. We quickly braved the light mist that was falling and set up our tents. We purchased a bundle of dry firewood from the campground host. In between drizzling spats, we quickly set the fire and got it burning comfortably. Before long, we'd also gathered a number of driftwood logs, pushed down by the swollen West Fork and deposited conveniently just downstream from our camping spot. Knowing we'd need more wood later in the evening, we piled the collected driftwood on top of and around the fire and allowed it to slowly dry. With the fire steaming and smoking, we cooked a hearty meal of hot dogs and beans as we spent the evening catching up and relaxing. Before long, our friendly neighbor made his way over in typical traveler fashion and introduced himself. He was an elderly man who had retired and now traveled full-time with his wife. Living affordably as they wandered from campground to campground, they spent their free time painting, carving, and working trade shows. We exchanged stories and quickly learned more about each other. As we chatted, he shared a number of interesting stories, the most fascinating of which was a tale of how he'd been struck by lightning a few years back, survived but lost some of the feeling in the tips of his fingers. The rain stopped falling and began to clear as the sun set. By 8 or so, things were dry enough to turn in and call it a night. I'll continue with day 2, spent hiking Priest Gulch, and day 3, spent hiking Lizard's Head Pass, in a follow-up post. Until then, my name is Alex Berger, and this is an audio of a post written on citadel-of-light.com. I hope you'll visit.